Welcome back to Worst Seats in the House. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta, coming to you from the remote location that is the Aquarius Home Services studio. Anthony, we're at your house.
Where we built the studio.
Yeah, we built the studio. It's very much sound checked pretty well. No echoes. Dogs are quiet. Margo's decided not to be on the phone during the this part of the podcast. Remember last time I was here, she was like on the phone during the second half.
Actually, I think she was just upset with us.
Yes, she was. So she decided to just have conversations.
This time it's like having Big Brother watching, just looking from the other room with the look in her eye that you better be careful about what you say next.
Yes. Where? But all right. By the way, our May live show, not happening. We're going to do a couple. We're going to do an extra show this summer. So stay tuned. But all those teases I've been saying about a May show, we're not going to do it. It's just too hard to plan right now because, frankly, I leave Wednesday for the first round of the playoffs, starting with games 3 and 4. I'm covering the Rangers Capitals series, just 3 and 4 there. And then I'm going to continue down probably to Florida and cover the Tampa Bay Lightning Florida series, the end of that series, and then be on from the second round on. Anthony, big day today. The Wild re-signed Marc-Andre Fleury, 1 year, $2.5 million deal, no move clause. I thought they'd get him at $3 million. They get him at $2.5 million. Good haircut there. I mean, Wild fans on there asked me why they didn't sign him at the league minimum. I mean, I don't even know if it's a serious question or not to get.
I actually think it was a serious question, and I think it just shows how absolutely delusional some people are. And the I didn't see the comments, but I'm going to assume it's somebody saying he said he wanted to stay here, so why not make him take a team discount? The guy's a Hall of Famer. The guy
took
a
team discount.
He did take a team discount, but the guy, he isn't a rookie. This guy is, he's headed to the Hall of Fame. He's going to be in the top three in every career goaltending category. He costs $2.5 million if you want that player.
Yeah. He's back. Now, obviously, on Friday, when Bill Guerin and John Hines meet with the media, they're going to talk about a tandem for next season and Gustafson and Fleury and how excited they are. But you and I both know that this offseason, that this likely means that they're at a minimum going to shop Philip Gustafson.
Well, I think they're going to shop him. I don't think it's necessarily a guarantee that they move him. I think we both have our opinions that it's most likely that he does get moved, but it all depends on what the return is. I don't think they're in a spot where they feel like this means we absolutely have to move him, just take the best offer that's on the table and go with it. I think it's going to have to be a deal that makes sense, because I don't think there's anything wrong with starting the season with those two guys and starting with Volstead and Iowa. And even if it's a month or however long, things could change during the season too. I think if I had to guess, I'd say they find a way to move Gus this summer. There will be teams out there that are looking for a goaltender that has at least some degree of a proven track record. The guy was one of the best goaltenders in the league down the stretch last year. He's shown flashes this year of being able to play at that level, just not consistently enough for the Wild to stay in the playoff hunt this year. But even just his last couple starts this year give you an idea of, all right, well, this guy, he has the skill set to be a terrific NHL goaltender.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. I don't think that you necessarily have to move him, but I definitely think that it'd be a consideration in large part because if you trade him, you save $3.75 million on the cap. With Volstead's at $925 million. Now all of a sudden you have an extra $2.7 million or so to work with this offseason. I think the big question inside the organization too is how much more can he really get from the AHL? You don't want to rush a goaltender, but really, is putting him in Iowa another year or the start of next season to do wonders for his development? I think that there's real serious question of that. I think they feel that he'd be somebody that could play up here and at a minimum not be worse than maybe Gus was this year, but play up here, split the games with Fleury, and be around a Hall of Famer and become somebody that turns into a protege, so to speak. Joe Smith did a story on Volstead a couple of weeks ago where he talked excitedly about that possibility of working with Flower. I think Flower is excited about, you know, if that were to happen. Obviously, he doesn't want Gus. They get along really well. Doesn't want Gus moved. But I just think that they're going to say that it's a tandem, but then deep down, they're going to try to move him this summer. If they get something significant, they would do it. What is significant? Who knows? He's coming off a below average year, obviously. Could they get a late first round pick maybe for him, a second round pick? Or the other thing is I look at the Wild's lineup, and we're going to be doing a big deep dive into what their lineup could look like next year in The Athletic on Friday. And if you have a top line of Kaprizov, Boldy, and Eriksson-Ek, and you have Rossi and Zuccarello on the second line, the one thing that is imperative next season is that Johansson cannot be your second line left wing by default. So can you put a Liam Ogre in there? Or now, at a minimum, they have $6.9 million in offseason cap space. Do you go out and try to sign a top six forward at $3.5 million?
I think you absolutely do. I think and we've had so many discussions about Ryan Hartman and Marcus Johansson underachieving this year. And I think Ryan Johansson is what he's always going to be. Marcus Johansson, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. But if you get Marcus Johansson, if he's a 33-point guy for $2 million on your third line, that's what 33 points costs right now in the NHL, but it can't be in a top six role.
Yeah.
If you're in a top six role on a secondary scoring line, you need more than that. Hartman could be a guy that could be there from time to time. I think the beauty of having those two guys on a potential third line, and there is more depth here because you're talking about a lineup that we haven't mentioned Foligno yet, haven't mentioned Husnadinov yet. Those guys are going to fit somewhere. You at least now have some guys that have the ability to push for ice time, that have ability to push to move up in the lineup, that if you're not going, well, tonight Ryan Hartman's going to jump up and take your spot, and it might last a week or a week and a half or 2 weeks. So I think there's some stuff like that. And Johansson could be that guy for a couple of games here and there that, hey, he's going tonight, throw him up there. But I think that's absolutely where you have to spend your money, because if you assume that on the back end, assuming Jared Spurgeon's healthy, the six on defense looks
the seven sound. They're 70 are a lock next
right.
year.
And the six that are likely your top six, you can win with those six. Mm-hmm. So I think you absolutely go out and spend whatever you have left on hopefully a top six forward.
And maybe Johansson is somebody, Gustafsson is somebody that you can actually go get a forward in that trade. You know, maybe go to a team like the Flyers and pick a young forward that might be isn't fitting there that can play in your top six and go that route. I think there's a very good chance that the lines to start next year are going to be Kaprizov, Eriksson-Ek, Boldy, Ogren / UFA, most likely UFA, or somebody that's traded in a Gustafsson trade. Rossi, Zuccarello, assuming Rossi's not traded, and it is not a given that he's not going to be. I'm just telling you. Third line, Johansson with Hartman in the middle, and then maybe Foligno on the right, and then a fourth line with Husnadinov starting in the middle, Goudreau on the right, and then a left wing that is either an Ogre in there, a guy from Iowa, or another young somebody that you assign as a UFA. They're also, I think, going to give Riley Heiden an unbelievable chance in training camp to try to earn a roster spot. If he makes the team, though, he's got to play in a better role. They're not going to have him on the fourth line, not playing junior minutes this year with his team. So you're not Ogren, you might let him grind out a little bit on the fourth line with Husnadinov. You're not putting Riley Height there in lieu of huge minutes for juniors. And again, he can only go back to juniors. I think your defense are clearly Middleton and Spurgeon is probably your second pair. Jabrodean and Faber is your top pair. Chisholm and Bogosian is your third pair. John Merrill is back as your seventh D. And then obviously Gustafsson and Fleury back as your goalies. If Gustafsson's traded, then Fleury and Volstad. If they trade Gus, they're going to have to get some sort of quality third goalie for Iowa that can come up and down if Volstad's not working or there's an injury.
Yeah, and I think as you lay it out like this, it's a dramatically different looking roster, especially when you consider that they're still fighting the salary cap penalties. It's not like they have the ability to go out and be free wheeling and dealing on the free agent market. But at the same time, they might be one piece away in your top six. And not that those guys are just out there and available at can't miss prices, but I think it's reasonable to go get somebody $3.5-4 million that can play wing, that can be a top six guy. when you start to look at, I mean, now all of a sudden a third line that has Foligno, Johansson, Hartman, that's a third line that's a viable NHL line, a fourth line that might have Husnadinov on it, maybe Ogren on it. You're just talking about different, totally different depth in your roster than what we saw for most of this year with this club. And some of the guys that we saw as the fourth liners this year will be your depth guys from Iowa. And I think they'll make a concerted effort to stock Iowa's roster with a bigger variety of player.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems they had this year was everybody that was there, well, all worth the price they paid, they were all similar players.
Exactly.
They were, you look at Lucchini and Beckman and Walker and Lettieri and even the guys then that they were replacing on the fourth line, guys like Dewar, they were all kind of that same type of player. You didn't have a heavier, bigger, more grit guy. You didn't have, maybe you have one or two of those smaller, speedier skill guys, but if you needed somebody lower in your lineup, they just didn't really have that kind of an option there in Iowa this year.
Yeah, and that's like one thing that I think that they would do better if with Iowa is having those type of guys that you mentioned and then bringing them up and actually putting them in that role where, like, I think that if you had a puck moving defenseman down there that you felt comfortable that if you had an injury to a puck moving defenseman, you could put on the number one or two power play. I think that's actually better than moving up a Brodin and saying, we're going to go with Brodin for a little while or something like that. Like taking guys out of roles. And then that's when you all of a sudden have a better mix of your team when guys are coming up and you're saying, all right, we're going to put that guy on the second line or we're going to put that guy.
Right. I think it's more evident with forwards where let's say you lose your second line winger. Well, mm-hmm. That's a spot where I suppose now you've got Ogren. If he's, let's just say he's starting the season lower in your lineup, he's probably the guy you bump. But if you bump him, okay, now we need a fourth line guy. Well, let's see if we can't grab a McLeod type player that they had in Iowa a few years ago. Have a guy like that available that you can bring up in a third or fourth line role. And some of these other guys, like Lettieri, like Walker, these guys are suited to play more of a skilled role. They just weren't, they're not the personalities that can go change the flow of a game, change the momentum of a game by getting after it on a physical forechecking shift. That's the kind of fourth line third and fourth line that we've seen the Wild have in recent years when they've had success. There's been the identity lines that could go change the feel of a game. And I just felt all year this year, the third and fourth lines for Minnesota just didn't have that kind of makeup.
Yeah.
And then when you lost a couple guys and Foligno, you either lost him from the lineup or he had lost a step while he was playing and Gaudreau's not a physical presence. They became easier to play against on those lower lines.
Yeah. I really feel like they went from grit first last year to like very little grit this year. I mean, the lack of not just secondary scoring on the third and fourth lines, it is not a hard group to play against. And the days of the grief line are long gone. I mean, even looking at Eriksson Ek's underlying numbers this year, playing with Kaprizov in a top six role, took a real step back. And then they don't replace that third line because Greenway's gone. You don't have that Eriksson Ek role this year. And then obviously Foligno's basically been injured for much of the year, was playing well defensively. I don't know. It's the fits on this team just haven't been good enough this year because, again, the lack of depth. You have a lot of guys in the third and fourth line that probably shouldn't be in the league.
Well, that, and I also think with Eriksson Ek, it's interesting to look at it because I don't know that you can go a whole season playing him with Kaprizov and Boldy. We saw it work for stretches this year. Then Hines had to go away from it for a couple reasons. One was that the other lines just weren't scoring. But the other is that if you keep him, if you separate him from Kaprizov from time to time, which when Hines did that, you could see how and why it works. Now, all of a sudden, Eriksson Ek goes against the other team's best guys, but Kaprizov doesn't have to. And it allowed him to free up. And I still think you have that flexibility with some of the people we're talking about, where now maybe it's a road game where you need to split those guys up and you throw Rossi with Boldy and Kaprizov with Zuccarello or something like that. Or you throw Ek with Boldy and throw Rossi up between Kaprizov and Zuccarello, whatever it might be. You've got some different options that where you can adjust your lineup game to game, week to week, and even shift to shift within a game. And I think with that, Erickson X numbers probably change the other way too. Just it stands to reason he's not going to be as rigid defensively when all of a sudden he's playing with two very offensive minded players right. in Kaprizov and Boldy. And I still think it's amazing when you look that line all year long was right up there with the best in the league in terms of efficiency of scoring goals per 60 minutes on the ice. We're talking better than the McDavid line, better than the MacKinnon line. They were remarkably productive when together. The problem is it just hamstrung the rest of the lineup that maybe they can get away from that next year.
Yeah. The secondary scoring though was a major problem, and it really became obvious when so many of their top six guys dried up. I mean, Erickson X got two goals in his last 21. Rossi hasn't been scoring at all. Zuccarello has no goals in his last 18 or 19. So that's been an issue. Let's talk about, before we get to Ogren, I just want to talk to you about a little bit about Kaprizov. You know, if he is their most valuable player, probably proven at the beginning of the year when they struggled and he was not going. It shows how important he is. He's got the biggest jump in points in the second half of anybody in the league. And I was so impressed. I was telling Bill Guerin this today. Like, I was in the press box in LA the other day, and I just like, I cannot get wait to get on the flight. Like, I had no motivation to like, what are you going to write? Right. The season's over. This game's meaningless. And then I'm looking at the ice and Kaprizov is working dominating. His absolute butt off. I mean, and again, I get it. LA has made the playoffs, but LA had some motivation. They don't want to play Dallas in the first right. round.
They were playing hard.
Yeah. And Kaprizov from the opening shift was just unbelievable that game. You know, creating chances, the back check where he just crushed Fiala, obviously the goal where he tried that same play a couple times in the game against Talbot. It really just says everything about his pride. And then after the game, when we're talking to him about just how on fire he has been, basically a goal a game the last 20 some odd games, he's basically like, yeah, but I leave interpreting what he says like, yeah, but we're not making the playoffs. So when I score, it's not satisfying right now.
I think the way he's played has been the way he's played since the team got knocked out has been the most indicative example of the kind of person he is, the kind of player he is.
Yeah.
And what makes him, we've always talked about him as being a first line all-star center or wing with fourth line work ethic. And I think that's been amazing. I think he's reestablished himself among, I don't know what, maybe top 15 players in the league, 15 forwards for sure, top 10 maybe. And going into this season, I thought he was there for sure. And then for stretches earlier this season, I remember talking with other words like, hey, boy, he doesn't look the same. And he's looked the same since about Christmas time. He's been as good as anybody. And he's a special player. There's no question about it. And he's the guy. Erickson Ek might be the most irreplaceable because of all the roles he plays, but Kaprizov's the most valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. His contract in a couple of years is going to be really fascinating because obviously he's going to want to break the bank, you know, but then you have guys like Pastrnak that make what 11, you know, ish. Can you really play him more? But his value to this team is unlike, you know, you can't lose him. Although I guess if you do, you got $11, $12 million to spend in free agency, but he is that important. Here's a word from some of our sponsors.
Hey everyone, attorney Jerry Bosch here with Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. For almost 30 years, we've represented Minnesotans just like you all over the great state of Minnesota to guarantee they've been treated fairly and with respect when they've suffered a work-related injury. A work injury can change your life in an instant. You need someone on your side who can help you focus on getting back on your feet and getting paid while you do. You may be entitled to medical benefits, wage loss benefits, job placement, retraining, and payment for permanent disability. To make sure you are being paid all the work comp benefits you're entitled to, please call the attorneys at Bosch Law Firm. The call is always free, and there's never a fee unless we recover benefits on your behalf. Call 651-333-8300, Bosch Law Firm, or visit us at WorkCompExperts.com.
Hey, this is Russo for Livia Weight Control Centers. Now is the time to get a jump on summer. You could lose up to 20 pounds or more in your first 8 weeks the Livia way. When you join Livia, you'll receive a personalized and doctor-recommended program tailored to your unique needs, goals, and lifestyle. Livia's amazing team of registered dietitians and nutritionists will guide you every step of the way, just like me. If you join Livia today, you'll get your first 8 weeks free. What could that equate to? Well, obviously, everybody's different, but after 8 weeks, I was down 20 pounds, and I'm now closing in on 30 because of the one-on-one support that I receive at my Livia Center in Woodbury, the great food I get from them that I complement with a nutritional program that they custom designed for me and my long days and hectic travel. Join Livia today and get your first 8 weeks free. Visit Livia.com, that's L-I-V-E-A.com, or call 855-GO-LIVIA. Make sure to let them know Russo sent you and they'll get you all set up. Plus, Livia is now offering GLP-1 medications, so ask for more information on that. Quiet the food noise and see accelerated results by summer. Visit Livia.com or call 855-GO-LIVIA. Start your weight loss journey now and get a jump on summer the Livia way. Welcome back to Worst Seats in the House. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta coming to you from Chateau LaPanta. Villa LaPanta, whatever LaPanta.
Chateau would be if we were in the south of France.
Yes, exactly. Let's talk about Liam Ogren. I love them going 11-7 the last couple games because, one, it gives Kaprizov and Boldy extra shifts every single game. But, you know, what was to me made sense the other day, like Wild fans need to figure out what they want, okay? Because they're all whining that Adam Beckman, you know, that Khuznetsov and Ogren are having to play with the Goudreaus and the Johansons all the time, and they're not getting a shot with Kaprizov and Boldy. And then they take Beckman out against LA and the fans go crazy when all that meant was Ogren and Khuznetsov was going to play an entire game next to Matt Boldy or Kirill Kaprizov. So it's like, pick what you want to be upset about. Like, how can you... You can't have it both ways. You can't say that Khuznetsov and Ogren aren't getting good line mates, and then they take Adam Beckman out of the lineup, who has no goals in 23 NHL games, by the way, and they put Kaprizov and Boldy for an entire game next to those two, alternating them, and you're still upset. So I don't understand what Wild fans are really upset about there, but regardless, man, like Ogren looks the part, doesn't he?
He does, and I thought it was really interesting to watch him in those first two games where he just, I don't know if it's his body size and strength where he just looks different than so many other young players. And it's, I don't know how many times we've talked about it this season, but I don't care where guys play. You have opportunities to open eyes. If you're playing on the fourth line, you still have a chance to show a coach, I got something. Liam Ogren didn't start on the first line. He didn't get thrown in with Kaprizov and Zuccarello on his first game or Eriksson Ek. He started out down in the lineup and yet immediately made an impact on that game. And the next night, he's got 2 points. Well, Adam Beckman could have done that. He didn't. Murat Khuznetsov could have done that. He didn't. Ogren did. And therefore, we're talking differently about him. And I think Khuznetsov's gotten better and better as these games have gone on, and yes, playing with Ogren certainly helps, but you're talking about these other guys that they've had ample opportunities to make themselves irreplaceable, and not one of them has taken advantage of it.
Khuznetsov, by the way, it's fun to watch him get more and more comfortable off the ice too. Beyond obviously scoring his first NHL goal in Vegas, but just in the locker room, joking around, messing around with the media, messing around during interviews. It's pretty cool. Ogren, I got to spend some time with his family before his NHL debut. And then his brother and his dad were actually on my flight to LA connecting to go to Copenhagen and then eventually connecting to get back to Sweden over there. So I got to talk to them not only before his NHL debut in Vegas, but then at the airport after he had his goal and assist, game-winning goal, first multi-point game, drew a penalty, all that stuff against the San Jose Sharks. And dad, Andreas, made a joke that it made the 30-hour trip there worth it. They had to go back because Noel, his younger brother who plays for Djurgården, had to get back for school. But Andreas is a badass, man. He is a trainer for a ton of different Swedish NHLers, has had all the big guys in the league, from Jesper Bratt to Patrick Hornqvist to Gabriel Landeskog to Nick Backstrom. So he's had all these different players over the years. So Liam has been around all these NHLers, learned what professionals are like, And then you could tell his dad's a personal trainer because he is just absolutely ripped to shreds, unlike most 20-year-olds, Anthony.
He doesn't look like a rookie. It really is amazing when you – he's sturdy, but also the way he played. He played with confidence along the boards. He played with strength. He – sometimes guys, when they're in that first game against men, against NHL speed and size, they shy away from it. He didn't shy away from it. He got knocked down a couple times, but he won his fair share of battles. And I just love the way he created opportunities. And I was just looking at his stats. He must have lost that assist. He had an assist in Vegas when the game happened, but it was taken away now. He only has the goal and assist from the next night.
Oh, really?
That originally had an assist in Vegas that night in his debut.
Okay. I think they did change on the Khuznetsov goal. They changed it to, I can't remember who they wound up crediting it to. He was on the ice for it, but yeah, his first NHL assist did come trying to remember what the first goal was against San Jose, but he had a goal assist that game, first multi-point game, first game winning goal. And then I thought he was really good against LA, especially defensively, stealing pucks, having smart, he's a very smart player.
Yeah. And I don't think you could go, I think this year's team was built to go 11-7. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can do it regularly throughout next year, but this year's team was due in part to the fact that you were so thin on those bottom lines anyway. But Kaprizov and Boldy and even Zuccarello, they have the motor to go all night. So you could play those guys an extra shift with your third liners there. But now if you throw these other guys back in the lineup, you throw a healthy Foligno in the lineup, there isn't going to be the need to go with 11-7 next year. Maybe it's something you do from time to time, but with this year's club, with this roster, I loved it.
Yeah. Especially down the stretch here. And I think John deploys it really well. There's been different nights, different reasons for different nights, but a lot of it is, I think, an indictment of the third and fourth lines, because next year, if they can amp that up and you have a third line again that I mentioned of, you know, Johansson, Hartman, and Foligno on a really quality fourth line, there's not any reason to go for it. They've got to improve their bottom six. I mean, there's just no doubt. You look at the best teams in the league,
it already is, just based on getting guys healthy. And as we were just talking through the players that you project in this lineup, assuming you add one forward, which they'll have the money to do, if you add one forward and you start to talk about guys, third and fourth line will now, if assuming that you throw them on a second line with Rossi and Zuccarello, your third and fourth line includes Ogren and Khuznetsov and Foligno and Hartman and Johansson. That's five guys who certainly look like they can. It's probably early to say Khuznetsov and Ogren are bona fide NHLers, but they sure look that way right now. Well, that's five guys right there. Mm-hmm. Freddie Gaudreau is a sixth. That looks a lot different than what the third and fourth lines were most of this year.
Right, exactly. I'll be interested to see Gaudreau next year too, and have a little bit of an offseason reset. I talked to him for a while in LA, and you know, he didn't want to use it as an excuse, but he's definitely been hurt this year.
Well, yeah, I remember he got hurt the first game of the year.
Second
game. And was clearly, he wasn't the same when he came back.
Right, and then they finally took him out for 10 games, but he said that every time, you know, he's gotten hit this year, not every time, but, you know, he's aggravated. And he also made it very clear that, like, you know, subconsciously he would agree that he's maybe avoiding contact and things like that, because he said your mind sometimes tries to protect your body. And it just feels like he hasn't been in a lot of confrontations this year, or at least less than he's normally been. You know what I was thinking too about Marco Rossi and how he really devoted himself to, you know, improving by spending here all last summer. Yeah, I was talking to Gustafsson the other day in LA, and I didn't realize that really he does not get ice in Sweden until like August 1st. They take out the ice in all these rinks. So for him to get ice, he's got to go all the way down to Stockholm, which he's like 7 or 8 hours away. You know, he's somebody, it would probably help him to maybe spend some time here with Matt Harder this offseason, working out and maybe get on the ice a lot more with Freddie Shabbat. Wouldn't you agree? I mean, if you want to devote yourself to becoming a regular NHLer and you feel like you're not getting enough ice in your home, you got to figure out something.
And I think ice is important, but I think fitness can be achieved and upgraded even without ice. I mean, ice is better, but there's plenty of things guys can do to get themselves into better shape. And he's not the only one on this Wild roster that I think will be challenged this offseason to get themselves either back into or into better shape coming into next year. And it's, I don't mean that to sound like, it isn't like guys came in carrying an extra 75 pounds. I mean, we're not talking about guys that are
not talking about sports writers.
Yeah. Or even guys in other pro sports from time to time. It's just, but there's just a difference. And I think it has a little bit to do with, you know, guys being able to keep themselves on top of their game from start to finish. It's hard to do that over an 82 game grind. If you start out fighting uphill, it's hard enough to maintain for guys who are in good shape to maintain it over the course of the season, to maintain strength, to maintain weight. And I think there's going to be more than a few guys that are going to be challenged and required to come back next year at a different spot.
Yeah, I'm
and Gustafson's one of them, yep, without a doubt.
I sat down with John Hines the other day in Vegas, watched the BU hockey game with him, his alum. Everything was fun in the interview until it wasn't, by the way, because all of a sudden they lost in overtime. It was like, all right, see you, John. But we, you know, turned on the recorder for a Q&A, and that was one of the things that he pretty much made clear, is that he's really glad that he came when he did, because now he's got a better feel, a handle going into this offseason. And I think some of the conversations he's going to have with some of the players that you're alluding to that might not be in the best of shape, or just some of the underachievers on this team, that they're going to be challenged, and honestly, by both him and Bill Guerin in these exit meetings on Friday.
And I think with some of the guys who underachieved, that probably played a part. Or some others who underachieved, I don't know if it did or not, because it's that wasn't an issue for all of them. Some of them were fighting through injuries, and that's part of it too. But injury prevention, a part of that is fitness. So I think it's good that Hines was able to come in and observe and see a team that, to in a lot of areas, in a lot of ways, you'd have to say they overachieved to stay in the race as long as they did. When you consider all the guys that they were playing without for basically his entire tenure, they really didn't have Spurgeon for essentially his entire time here. They lost Foligno for a big chunk of that. And those are two leadership guys. They're two guys that hold everybody else accountable. They're two guys that set examples. And yet when you look at every metric, we talked about this a couple shows ago, if you eliminate goaltending and you talk about what teams' projected points would have been just based on the flow of the game, expected goals and expected goals against, and the Wild would have been a over 100 point team. They would have been a playoff team if they just had goaltending that was at the league average, at the expectation level of goaltending. And that, I think, says a lot when you consider all the flaws we were just talking about, the lack of depth, the lack of depth scoring in your third and fourth lines, the beat up blue line for large chunks of the season. And yet they all bought in, for the most part, to how they had to play the game to stay relevant until the final 2 weeks of the season. I think that says a fair amount about the character of the club. And I think Hines was able to learn a little bit about that. Then also see what the undoings were. The inability to, when push came to shove, they had the week and a half against some of the big boys in the West, and they got pushed around. And I think that was an eye-opener too, so that no matter how hard you play and how willing you are to try to play the game the right way, there are just some matchups that are difficult for the Wild.
And, I mean, does that give you concern going into next year? Because it's not like they're just going to magically become a faster, grittier, harder team size. I mean, you're getting Foligno back. I talked to Foligno the other day for another story that I was working on, so I took the opportunity to ask him about his health, and he is confident that he's going to come back next year healthy, now having both sides of his abdomen done in the last, the core muscle there by his pubic bone done here in the last couple years. But, you know, look, they traded Duhaim. I know what you think there. They've obviously lost speed with Durer. They're probably, you know, there's a very good chance that Shaw's leaving this offseason if they don't want to re-sign him, just based on the fact that they're not going to give him a one-way and he might get a one-way in arbitration. You know, it just, you know, traded Maroon, you know.
So all the guys you're talking about, and Duhaim I liked as a player, but he just
But then I'm saying you also do compound this on Duhem and Dumba and all that.
But he didn't bring much elsewhere. Maroon wasn't, he couldn't get to places to finish hits anymore anyway. Dewar's speed, if you're new fourth line guy, is Murat Husnadinov. You haven't lost anything in speed there. So I just don't think you've lost that. I think you can be a hard team to play against. Physical size helps, but it's also just a commitment to play in the game the right way. And you can be hard to play against with speed as much as you can with physicality. I do think that, you know, losing Foligno was a big difference, because even if you have one line that is a change the feel of a game kind of line, and Foligno's line could be that. And who knows, maybe Ogren turns into a guy that becomes hard to play against that way. He certainly has the body type to be it. I mean, even though he's a scorer, I mean, he can be a big, strong, physical guy. Maybe Ryan Hartman becomes that kind of a guy, just an absolute in-your-face pest. And if now on your third line you have guys like Foligno and Hartman that also have a little skill, now you might have something.
I want to talk to you a little bit more about the John Hines interview that I did. But I talked to Barry Trotz today for a half hour, the Nashville Predators GM, obviously Stanley Cup winning coach with Washington, longtime coach in Nashville Islanders. And he was going on and on to me about how good Gus Nyquist has been there. Guy has 75 points this year. And, you know, we talked about this on a little bit last week. You know, if Johansson wasn't nearly as good as he was in that little stint with Boldy, the Wild probably make a different decision. Now, obviously, you get Johansson at $2 million, but the big thing there was the Goudreau contract. If you know, Goudreau also got 2-1, so there's right there 4.1. So if Gus got $3 million in Nashville, now you could have signed him for $3 million, and then obviously that's two players. Now you got an extra $1 million that you could have gone and signed a freaking Thomas Noshik or something. Obviously would have should have. I get why they re-signed Johansson, but man, in hindsight, how good would Nyquist have been on this team?
You'd prefer to have Nyquist for sure, but they couldn't afford him. Yeah. And you remember,
but again,
they couldn't afford him because of those two contracts. But they had already signed Gaudreau long before they even saw Nyquist.
No. They signed Gaudreau the day that Nyquist debuted.
Well, right. That's what I'm saying. They hadn't even seen Nyquist yet.
Right.
He hadn't even played with him yet. They had signed Gaudreau already. And then by the time the season's over, now you didn't, because you had locked in Gaudreau. And let's remember that when Gaudreau was signed, and you and I talked about it at the time, ideally, what would be the ideal number? $1.5 million? So maybe they're $500,000 over what he legitimately, maybe 1.75, somewhere in that neighborhood. He was coming off a good year. He had been a really good, responsible defensive player that also chipped in 19 goals. He had been incredibly valuable in shootouts. That's worth close to $2 million probably. And, you know, maybe it was a hair higher than I would have. Like, if you would have just said, without being in the negotiations, what do you think a long-term deal for Freddie Gaudreau looks like? I would have guessed between $1.5 million and $2 million a year. So it wasn't that far off. He got a little more than what you would have expected. But the problem with Nyquist was when he came and finally played, I didn't know what he was going to be able to bring. And I thought
missed an entire season.
And he was terrific. But by that time, now you don't have the money to sign him. And I know there were talks at that time that he might get $4 million somewhere.
Yep,
and so I think it was at that time it was, hey, we got to just lock in. We can get Johansson at $2 million. And I started to look this up, but before we do our next show, we'll try to figure it out, because I know there's been so much venom toward Marcus Johansson and being an underachiever this year. And I've made the point here that this is what he always is. He's a 30 to 40 point guy. How many veteran guys do you think are out there? So let's say veterans, like, you know, we're not talking guys that are still on young, early in their career contracts. Let's say guys that are 27-ish or older, 28, somewhere in that neighborhood. Wingers that scored more, because if we're going to call this season the death of the Wild and say that his 30 points was the biggest underachieving, what would be legit? 40, 42, 44?
Yeah.
How many forwards or wingers do you think at that point in their career scored more than 44 points and made $2 million or less?
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying.
No, I'm just curious. I don't know what the number is, but I bet it's not very big.
No, I agree with you, but you know, I would say that the venom toward Marcus is also with the eye test. The fact that he is, without any sort of accountability, gotten anointed second line left wing for most of the year
I disagree with that. I think he was put in there because they didn't have another option.
No, I'm saying it was by default.
But it wasn't that they gifted it to him. They didn't have anybody else. And that's what the point I made earlier in the show is his scoring is worth the price, but it can't be in your top six.
Right.
That has to be a third line guy that maybe sometime he's on your second power play and maybe every once in a while on nights where he's going, and he's had a few of those nights where his skating has been a huge factor in a game. All right, now you throw him up there for a couple shifts and let him push a line. And we saw that late in the season last year. But I just think it isn't that they just decided that, well, because we signed this guy, we're going to prop him up here and leave him in front of guys that are outplaying him. There just haven't been guys outplaying him.
Yeah. I agree. Lately though, is where I think people are gotten annoyed that he is just sort of there, when you could be playing, you know, I'm not saying Beckman, but an Ogren or somebody else.
But Ogren they didn't have
right.
until the final week.
Yeah.
Husnadinov they didn't have until the final two and a half
weeks. There's not many options.
I mean, the rest of the year, who is it going to be?
Yeah, there's not many options, but man, has he not been good. I'm sorry. Like, I get when you look overall that he's just doing what he always does. Well, then that's just not good enough. Like his play in Vegas.
But it's not good enough if you are going to play in your top six.
Right.
But that's not his fault that's where he is.
Right.
He's just there because nobody else could play there.
But in Vegas, you know, was an example where, you know, he's taking offensive zone penalties when he's losing pucks on shorthanded rushes.
He
turned the puck over on the one goal. He's played just a soft brand of hockey. And again, that's him. But he needs to be much, much better, more engaged. And I know that he's one of the veterans that was addressed by John Hines.
He has to be better, but I just don't think the difference between what he is this year and what a better Marcus Johansson looks like we're not talking about like a Grand Canyon of difference. We're talking about a guy that instead of getting 30, maybe gets 40. But if he gets 40 and he gets it in a second power play, third line role, you've got something with which you can win.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
There were stretches this year where for 3, 4, 5 games he was skating and then there've been stretches within games where you can just tell, and he's not the only one. I mean, there's nights where Kaprizov is going
right,
and he just looks different than he does on other nights. And there are nights where he looked like, you could tell from the drop of the puck, holy cow, this guy's got it going tonight. He's playing fast. He's skating. And I just think if you all of a sudden create a line that has some identity, last year they had it when he was playing with Ekin Boldy, the line played the same way and he was able to maintain it for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, I just don't think the fit was ever quite right either. And not that admonishes him from guilt, but it's all responsibility.
But he did start the year with those two, and it just wasn't there. Yeah, it just was not there at all.
And it wasn't there for Boldy either.
Yep. Here's a word from some of our sponsors.
There are a lot of options to buy glasses out there. If you've been disappointed by high prices or poor online quality, check out our friends at Huxley Optical. I like Huxley for two reasons. First is the price. Simply put, I don't want to spend $800 on glasses. At Huxley, I know I'll get the same quality for half the price. They're a small, independent business that is here to help you find glasses you love and save you money. Second is the service. They have options catered to what I need, and I know someone will be happy to help me find glasses. Whether it's a lens replacement, office glasses, or a brand new pair, they're always ready to help. Check out HuxleyEyewear.com. Again, that's HuxleyEyewear.com today. Or go to their locations in Wayzata or Roseville. Tell them Russo sent you for 10% off your prescription purchase. Hey, it's Russo from my friends over at Aquarius Home Services. You know, some say as you age, surprises diminish, but daily I'm astounded by my love for Kinetico water treatment systems. It's a constant delight. With Kinetico in both my home and my cabin, I can confidently say it's the best, just like the Aquarius team. The minimal salt usage, the pristine cleanliness of my laundry, dishes, and showers, it's absolutely unbeatable. Plus, it runs on zero electricity. My recommendation? Get a free water analysis from Aquarius Home Services and prepare to be amazed by Kinetico Water. Aquarius believes in earning the right to be recommended. They're just a click away at KineticoMN.com. And don't forget to mention, Russo sent you.
Don't wait. Save smarter with a 5.10% annual percentage yield 13-month certificate from Royal Credit Union. Royal's 5.10% 13-month certificate has no minimum opening balance and a locked-in rate for a guaranteed return on your investment. Open a 5.10% 13-month certificate at any Royal office or online at rcu.org/certificate510. Early withdrawal penalties could reduce earnings and principal. APY accurate as of 3/1/24. Insured by NCUA.
Back here, worst seats in the house, Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta. Final segment of the show. We get some Twitter questions and things like that. I mentioned just Boldy right before the break, Anthony. That was one thing that I found fascinating, the respect level that John Hines has for Matt Boldy and his potential star power. But man, did he echo things that we've heard from him for a while now, that he's got to be harder, find a power game. We saw that in LA. He looked really good. We see it at times, but it's got to be more consistent, right, for him to take that next step.
I think so, and I think playing with Joel Eriksson Ek and Kirill Kaprizov has helped bring that out of him. Mm-hmm. And it's been more of a direct line game. And to be frank, when Hines put those three guys together, it wasn't just Boldy that he was trying to change the game. It was also Kaprizov, where he said, we got to get these guys just playing simpler, straight ahead, faster game, and not the side-to-side stuff that we sometimes see probably too much from when you put Kaprizov with Zuccarello. They sometimes get caught up in the, hey, let's make six cross-ice passes on a shift, and every once in a while it works, but then there's a lot of nights that it doesn't. And I think it wasn't just Boldy he was trying to get to change the way he was playing. The result was that Boldy took off with those guys, and as we talked about earlier, they became the most efficient scoring line in the NHL.
By the way, I'm looking forward to the World Championships this year. The rosters for Canada and the U.S. are going to be absolutely stacked. The U.S. roster is like an all-star team.
It's a tournament that I've almost never watched.
Exactly. I will this year.
I will. And I think it's interesting to hear some of the national leadership guys talking about, it's a tryout. It's a chance for these guys to go.
Like Brock Faber and Matt Boldy better be there, or it would not be a good look for them.
Right. I agree. Yeah. And it's a chance to, I think anytime you get a chance to throw on your country's sweater, that's a special thing. But I just think it's probably stressed more with the Four Nations tournament and the Olympics coming up, where 100%. It's you've got these guys, you got a chance to open people's eyes.
I was talking to David Quinn the other day, who's coached the U.S. 2 years ago, and he's like, our first 20 guys we asked said no, that won't be the case this year. It hasn't been. There's gonna be a lot of great players there, and I by the way, think that John Hines is gonna be the head coach of that team. Hines is obviously well decorated with USA Hockey. He's been the head coach or assistant coach on dozens of USA Hockey teams over the last 20 some odd years. So I would fully expect that later this week we're going to find out that he is the head coach of the World Championship team. Jonathan Thies asks, is Jake Middleton cut out to be a top four D-man on a good team? Should one of the Wild's priorities in the summer be to upgrade there? I don't think so. I think that he, for some bizarre reason, I don't think that they need to worry about upgrading. I think a big D would be nice, like if they can get a Brendan Dillon or something like that. But I think that obviously Chisholm's here. You have Merrill that's here, unless they stash him in the minors. Bogosian on the right. I think if your top four is Brodin and Faber and a healthy Jarrett Spurgeon with Middleton, we've seen Jake Middleton play his best hockey with Jarrett Spurgeon. I think that threw him in a state of flux this year. I think he's fine if he's in your second pair.
I think so. I think it might end up being a little bit of a mix because it depends on the steps that Declan Chisholm takes.
He's got to take a lot of steps.
He does. He's got some upside offensively, but he's got a long way to go. And so right now you have to start with Middleton in your top four. And I think if he's a second pair guy where Brodin and Faber handle the major workload, whatever the number, 25 minutes a night, and Spurgeon ends up somewhere 22, 23, maybe Middleton's closer to 20. I think he's fine. In an ideal world, I think he's a, a fifth defenseman on a really good team, and he'll probably have to be the fourth defenseman for the Wild, right, which is close enough. And he's proven that he can be good when playing with Spurgeon. I think the Wild, and for the reason you were talking about earlier when you're talking about the forwards, they need more of a physical game from him, a little more of a strength, of an accountability game probably shown from him, just because of the fact that their forward group isn't likely to get any bigger.
Yeah. I think if John Hines had to, you know, John wants, obviously, I would think a top six forward, but I think he'd love another top four D. But I think the hope is that one of those kids down in the minors maybe can turn into that. Or, you know, if you want physicality, Ryan O'Rourke, we'll see. I mean, they're obviously not ready yet, and they're not going to be on this team next year without injuries. Again, John Merrill being the one guy that is going to probably enter next season as the number seven, if healthy. And again, they theoretically could throw him in the minors, but they're, you know, then you're calling somebody up to be the seven. So I don't think they do that. So I think Merrill's on this team next year. Chris asked, it appears the Wild have about $5 million for next season. It's really about 6.9 more if they trade Gustafson. Any thoughts on what if they would upgrade that money? I think left wing on the second line is the way to go.
Well, yes, I'd say with the way the roster looks right now, I think that's the way to go. A lot can change with potential deals. If Gustafson gets traded,
maybe it's for a forward.
Now things are different. Yeah, it depends on who comes in that trade. If they end up making a move somewhere else, which it wouldn't surprise me. Billy is an aggressive guy. He's been aggressive since he's been here, and he hasn't been afraid to make moves with guys that the perception was were a big part of the organization. And one of them was the deal that brought Gustafson here in the first place. But so well, just,
again, I know that he's had a very good year, a good rear. I am not convinced that he would not move Marco Rossi for a young center
I just think he's going to be willing. If the deal's right, don't be surprised if he pulls the trigger with him or with any of these guys, really. I don't think he gets married to his roster like some other GMs do around the league.
Yep, 100%. Puck Over Glass asks, with Ogren, Kuzma, DNF, Shaw, Lettieri fighting for spots next training camp and early in the season, is there any chance Johansson, assuming his play doesn't improve from this season and the final year of contract, we get waived to make room for others? I mean, they're not waiving Marcus Johansson to create spot for Mason Shaw or Vinny Lettieri. Lettieri is going to be the way he is always in camp. He's going to come into camp next year. He's going to fight for a roster spot, and he's going to start in Iowa. That's just, if they are healthy, that's just the way that it works. And then if he gets called up, he'll be here. Mason Shaw, unless he's going to take a two-way contract, is probably going to be not tendered a qualifying offer. That's just my gut feeling, because they are not giving him a one-way deal. I cannot imagine. So then Ogren and Khuzandinov there. In terms of the question on Johansson making room for anybody, there's no room that needs to be made. Even with Marcus Johansson on this team, there's room to go get a couple forwards, whether it's at second line left wing or having somebody as a 13th forward or something like that. Marcus Johansson, they're not going to waive. At $2 million, as Anthony mentioned, on his contract is quality if it's on the third line. And the other thing is you hope that he's motivated because it's a contract year.
And he's a guy that has the potential to move up in a lineup. And that's the difference between Marcus Johansson and some other third line guys. And I think Ryan Hartman falls into that category too, where if he starts the season on your third line, he's a guy that can move up in your lineup, and guys that can push the guys above where I really don't think there were guys that got complacent, but it's human nature. When you look over your shoulder and no matter how good or bad things are going, you know, there's nobody behind you that's going to take your spot. And I think as we talk about this roster, now that's not going to be the case anymore. And if you're Marco Rossi and you're not going and Ryan Hartman's centering the line below you on the sheet, well, how long do you think that's going to last? Mm-hmm. And if you're whoever this second line left wing is and you're not going tonight and Johansson is, he's going, or Ogren's going, or whoever it might be. You just have some guys now that look like they'll be starting nights on the third and fourth line, but they're going to be guys that have the capability of jumping up in the lineup and pushing some of those other guys for roles.
Jordan asks, does Riley Hite get a 9-game look? I think so. I think he's going to have a really good chance to make the team, at least out of camp, temporarily next year on that 9-game look. And again, the 9-game look means that for a junior age kid like him, you could keep him 9 games, and without playing a 10th, it won't burn the first year of the contract, and you could technically send him back to juniors after that. Some teams don't care, let's be honest. I mean, Matt Dumba played, I think, 13 games his first year, and they still sent him back to junior and didn't care that it burned the first year. Big BP 55 goes, what's the latest on the Danilo Yurov contract situation? Given what we've seen from Ogren, do you feel he is better suited for a third line role, which seems to be the only available spots at this point, at who's locked into roster spots next year? Well, we talked about Ogren having the chance to maybe be that second line left wing if they don't sign a contract, a free agent forward. I think they're signing a free agent forward, though. I think it's tailor-made there. They got the money. I think they have to improve their top six. I think they got to ensure that Joe Hansen's not just there by default. So my guess is Ogren starts either in the minors last year or in a fourth line role or a third line role, depending on health. And the latest on Yurov is nothing new. He's in the playoffs right now in the KHL, and the Wild would love to sign him. Doesn't sound like they're going to be able to do that, and that he's going to stay at least another year in Russia, but it's not set in stone yet. They've tried, but this is so far what he wants to do. Not the worst thing in the world. Cholson 18 goes, is there a possibility Spurgeon retires or goes on LTIR for the remainder of his contract?
Anthony? No.
We hope to talk to Spurgeon Friday, but no, his plan is to come back.
He's looking great. Oh, I saw him at the rink a couple times, and
he looks great.
And he just looks relieved.
Young as old as ever and healthy and hasn't put on an inch of fat.
Right.
Annoying. Jimmy goes, from a contract standpoint, will it save money if Faber doesn't win the Calder? No. The Wild are giving him 8x9 at a minimum. I promise you that. Here's the why not sign the Fleury at a league minimum. No, we don't need to.
We can skip over that.
Yeah, we've already ripped you. Let's see. Somebody asked Anthony about best Vancouver restaurant and bar, Ben Tesler. You're the good at that stuff.
Well, yeah, there's a couple. I actually have a friend who's going to Vancouver this summer, so I just spent some time putting together a list of places for him to go. And I like, there's two steakhouses there that I really like. One is Black and Blue. That's a little more modern. The other is Gotham, which is a little more old school. And I love the bar area in Gotham. They've got this back room with comfortable leather chairs and kind of these old school velvet walls. They make good cocktails. They have a good wine list. So I'd go to Gotham, hang out there first, have a cocktail. You'll have a great steak that you won't be disappointed with. You can have a cocktail after dinner in the lounge too. They make a good old fashioned. And then I like going down to Frankie's to listen to jazz. It's down closer to the arena, but I think they only have music since COVID. It's been different. I think they might only have music Thursday through Sunday or something like that, but that's a good spot to go to. And then you should go to the Cordero's down on the water for a pre-dinner cocktail.
It's a cool spot,
especially if you're there in the winter, because they got a great fireplace in there. It's a comfortable, cozy spot. Great place. I haven't had dinner there before. I've just had appetizers, but it's a great spot to go have a cocktail first before you go to dinner.
JTRO asks, displaced Yotes fan. I live in Minnesota, so the Wild are my new team for the long run. What would you tell a new fan of the team? Like, how would you sell them on this franchise?
Well, go to a game and you'll realize you're not in Phoenix anymore.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Arizona playing its last game tonight. Anthony, going to be announcements coming in the next day or so that they are moving to Salt Lake City. You and I discussed this on last week's podcast, but I've talked to a lot of agents, a lot of players last week. And look, nobody wants to see Arizona go away. I think everybody feels for the employees there, for the fans there. But I think inside the league, they realized that it just wasn't tenable there anymore. They had to get rid of this ownership, one, and get some stable ownership by going to Ryan and Ashley Smith in Utah. They've got to figure out a way to get a new building, because they're going to be playing in an arena that is 34 years old, is not outfitted for hockey. It's going to have a lot of obstructed seats. It's going to be the smallest rink in the league still.
But still better than Mullet. Right.
But I think there's just a belief that now they're going to get the beginning of a healthy franchise. And that is the thing. Like, these players, they feel like less than NHL players when you go there and you're playing there every single game. Matt Dumba has essentially said that. And I think that the big thing is when it comes to, like, is escrow. Like, these players, they're not just costing revenue for that franchise. It's 700 players in the league that are penalized because of the lack of revenue streams in that market. Right. And that had to change. It's not fair to play in that building another three or four years.
And nobody wanted to go there. Right. So this was a team that was going to have a hard time even getting to the salary cap floor. They really are well situated for the future. They've got 20 draft picks in the first three rounds of the next three drafts.
Yeah.
It, more than any team in the league by a wide margin.
And tons of prospects.
And they have some good young talent. The only way they got to the floor these last few years was because of dead money, and that dead money is essentially gone now. So they just couldn't get guys to go sign to play there. I think it would have been tough for them to get to the salary cap floor this year. So I think it's unfortunate. You know, we like going to Scottsdale, and anytime you get a chance to go there in the middle of winter, it's a nice little break. But the reality is, it just wasn't going to work there. And maybe the motivation will now be to get a deal done and get a new team down there and a new building and give them a fresh start, because really they've never really done it right there. As committed as the NHL has been to try to make it work somehow, some way in that market, they've just never really been in the right spot in that metropolitan area.
Final thoughts. Let's go through the playoff in the East. Florida versus Tampa. Who you got?
Florida's playing so well right now, but I don't know. There's just something about Tampa that I have this feeling they're going to step it up. I think that's going to be a really long series. And I guess if I was a betting guy, I'd have to put my money on Florida, but I just would not be surprised at all to see Tampa upset them in that series.
Yeah, you got somebody in Stamkos is very motivated because this could be it for him. No, he could be a
Kucherov's been unbelievable.
Kucherov had his 100th assist today, and I don't care how bad Vasilevskiy's numbers are. You put Vasilevskiy in a playoff series, you're gonna probably favor him. I mean, Hedman's been great, Point's been great. It's deep. Dumba's been good there.
I think it's a 7-game series. I'll go Panthers in seven. Attrition.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Florida too. Boston versus Toronto.
Boston wins. Toronto, I don't like the way they're playing right now, mm-hmm. and Boston has their number. I think this is what, 5 times they've met now in the last 12 years, and Boston's won each of the last 4 series. Mm-hmm. I like Boston.
Yep. I'll go with Toronto.
All right.
Rangers, Caps.
Rangers.
Yeah.
Great story. Caps have been great. Charlie Lindgren's been unbelievable for the second half, but the Rangers are better.
Minus 34 goal differential for a playoff team.
And just
crazy.
Finding ways.
How about Tortorella? Like, how is it humanly possible that nobody told Tortorella in his ear from the video room, hey, by the way, we are eliminated? I mean, you saw that whole thing? So basically, so with five minutes before in real time, David Perron scores with 3 seconds left to put that Detroit in overtime, that eliminated Philadelphia. Somehow Torts doesn't know this, pulls his goalie, Washington scores in the empty net, and then in turn eliminates Detroit and Pittsburgh.
Right.
And puts Washington in the playoffs.
I was flipping back and forth from the two games when I was in the studio working the Twins game last night, and we were off the air. So I was flipping back and forth between the two and was fascinated by it because Detroit was down in the closing seconds.
Yeah.
So I was talking to Tim Lautner. I said, hey, Philly, if they're tied late in regulation, they're going to pull the goaltender here, mm-hmm. because they legitimately have a chance. If Detroit loses that game, now they're only a win here. And now all you have to hope for is Pittsburgh to lose to the Islanders the next night. And sure enough, we see Detroit score. And I really, when you think about those two games Detroit played against Montreal, unbelievable.
Yeah.
Came from down 4-1 the game before to win. And the building was, I mean, the atmosphere and the celebrations on the bench were fun to watch. But yeah, it is too bad. And it's, but, you know, let's just say this was 10, 15 years ago, or maybe those real-time scores aren't quite real time, Tortorella might have done the same exact thing where, you know, he was trying to win. He was trying to get his team in. I mean, let's say that Detroit game, let's say it took place 4 minutes later, same result would have happened.
Yeah.
And it's too bad because, and maybe Washington wins the game in overtime anyway, you don't know, but it's too bad to see those teams get eliminated on a play like that.
Yeah, exactly. But you know what? Anytime you got to rely on somebody else to do your work for you, you're probably in trouble.
Right.
So, you know, that's just the reality. Carolina Islanders.
I'll take Carolina. Yeah, and I think that's a quick series.
I agree with you. Real quick. The one, you know, West isn't set yet, but one series that is Winnipeg, Colorado, with Winnipeg having home ice advantage. Colorado has not played very well of late.
No, they've been terrible.
Yeah.
And Winnipeg and just spanked them. Good.
Yeah.
The goaltending's been poor. And when we saw them, we talked about this. I love their big three, but their depth is not what it was when they made their cup run a couple of years ago. This is a different Colorado team. I wouldn't want to have to beat Nathan MacKinnon in a playoff series, but I think they probably still win that series against Winnipeg, but I think it'll be a long series. But I don't see Colorado coming out of the West this year. I just don't. I like Dallas better. I like Vegas better. The playoff edition of Vegas, not the regular season edition of Vegas. I like Vancouver. I think there's a few teams that I would probably put ahead of Colorado if I was ranking the teams in the West.
Still not exactly confident with Vegas's goaltending situation with what's going on with Hill and Thompson. And
Thompson's been so good down the stretch.
Yeah.
And he had one bump, and that was that game in Arizona where Arizona scored 6 in the third period to come from behind and win 7-4. The last was an empty netter. But other than that, he's been terrific. And Hill hasn't looked the same as he did last year, but he didn't look the same as he did last year at any point last year until the playoffs started. Mm-hmm. So who knows? He might be able to turn it on again.
Yeah. All right. Well, good show, Anthony. We'll be talking next week. Probably it's going to have to be remote with me on the road and you back here. So we'll have to figure out a way to do that. Brandon, I'm sure, has all the answers for how we could do that and make it sound good. Thanks for joining us at the Aquarius Home Services Studio. Thanks to our sponsors, Bosch Law Firm, Livia Weight Control Centers, Huxley Eyewear, Aquarius Home Services, your local authorized dealer for Connecticut Water Treatment Systems, and Royal Credit Union. Talk to you next week, everybody.
So much coming out, there's nothing going in. I know that you feel like you're never gonna win. Oh, but the world won't forgive a winner.
So it's like, pick what you want to be upset about.